today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, New York City's new regulations on renting out your place seems to be impacting hotel occupancy, and Southwest has a deal for Costco shoppers. Might even be worth taking out a membership. Those stories next in the news.
At 11:20 in our Smarter Travelers segment, we talk about authentic travel experiences. Be careful what you wish for, because it might just show up, like maybe on your dinner plate.
Charlie Leoka from Travelers United is our guest interview at 11:35. Charlie tells the story of baggage rules Congress approved nearly a decade ago, which still aren't a reality, and explains how that can happen.
Wendy's announced that they're going to go the way of hotels and airlines and start dynamic pricing. Could this be the beginning of something really bad for travelers? And we have some tips for Airbnb and VRBO renters, all on our Odds and Ends segment, coming up at 11:50.
Thank you for the privilege of your time, whether you're listening to us live or by podcast. Welcome to The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here every Saturday at 11 a.m. Also available at your podcast, either at TravelGuysRadio.com or, for that matter, at KFBK.com. Tom and Mark with you. Mark, how are you? Welcome. We are ready to do another show, and you are, at this time of the year, where else but at spring training.
Yeah, Tom, it's a tough job, but somebody has to do it. It's been, spring training has not been that great of an experience so far. Those of us Giant fans, we got rained out Thursday night in Scottsdale, and then last night we got rained out in Peoria. So we've been here for 48 hours and haven't seen a ball game yet. But it looks like today here, in just about an hour or so, there's not a cloud. Oh, wait a minute, there's one cloud over there, but there's not much of a cloud in the sky. So hopefully we will be on the right track today, get to see some baseball in the sunshine. Tom, this is really a unique place in March. I'm sure people come here all winter long. But in March, you get this interesting combination of spring break and spring training. And oftentimes there's an C2A basketball going on down here. Some part of March Madness, one round is in town or something like that at some moment in time. So this is really a very popular place in March. And if you're coming to the Phoenix area in March in the future, either for spring training or one of the other events that I've talked about, or just to come down here in March on a vacation, you need to make reservations well in advance, because prices don't get cheaper as you get closer to the date. Plus, we had an interesting thing happen Thursday night with the rain out. It wasn't a legal game. Tom, have you ever bought tickets to a sporting event or anything online from, you know, StubHub or SeatGuru or anything like that?
Maybe once or twice. I think I bought tickets to, of all things, an Oakland A's baseball game some years ago. Why do you ask?
Well, keep in mind, last night something interesting happened. You know, this ball game got rained out. They only played two innings Thursday night, and then the game was canceled, which meant that everybody's ticket, it's not a legal baseball game, so you're entitled to get a refund. I mean, imagine if you went to the movie and they only showed 20 minutes of it and said, gosh, the projector broken. Sorry, but we're just going to keep your money. So it doesn't work that way. In baseball, you have to get 4.5 innings, and they didn't. And they made an announcement, and the Giants sent out a wonderful email saying, you know, if you bought your tickets from the Giants, everything will work out, and we'll send you the refund and credit instructions in the next day or two. If you bought your ticket from somewhere else online, go back to those companies and see what their online refund policies are in order to figure out, you know, where you are. So I thought about that, and I thought, gosh, you know, if you're one of those people who tends to buy tickets on the secondary market, you know, and for some reason the contest, the event doesn't come off the way it's supposed to, make sure that you've done your homework on what the refund policies might be before you buy the ticket, because there were a lot of folks here the other night who bought their tickets from places other than the Giants, and I'm guessing that their refund situation wasn't quite as easy as people who had. So that's just something to consider when you're thinking about buying tickets from another source.
Yeah, good point, Mark. Good point. And I would say the chances of getting a refund are slim and none, and certainly it's going to take a lot longer. Good advice. Good advice. Well, all right.
Hey, listen, one other thing before we go here, to leave the subject. A friend of mine mentioned something, and we're in town here where a lot of people are renting cars. That we talk about this occasionally, but I've mentioned for a long time. If you're renting a car and it's more for than a day or two, car rentals from locations that are not located at the airport are often much cheaper than they are if you rent your car at the airport. They have to pay a concession fee to the airport, which is anywhere between 8% and 20%, and they pass that on to you. So, and there are some other costs with doing business at the airport that locations for the same Hertz car rented for 3 miles from the airport that you took an Uber to their location could cost you hundreds of dollars less, especially if you were renting it long time. So if you're renting car rentals, do your homework and see if the location away from the airport, that the combination of the lower price might not be worth a little bit of inconvenience. Just a tip that came up here today.
Very good. Very good. I learned that in my lesson a long time ago when I would rent in San Antonio at the airport and found out that I could save oftentimes hundreds of dollars by renting off-site. So, go for that. All right. As I was about to say, at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news. We say, and with the travel news, here's Mr. Mark Coughlin.
And in the travel news, let's see here. Some travel advisors are saying that it was no shock to them that American Queen Voyages shut down because they really didn't expect them to make it. Why? Because they were already having trouble with customer service and refunds and some of the other things that we've talked about on this program. We still do have several river cruise lines still in operation here in the U.S., and we will get one of them is American Cruise Lines. That's the biggest at this point. And we are going to have someone from American Cruise Lines come on the radio in case you are not familiar with river cruises and talk to us a little bit about their products in the next week or two. So if you are a river cruise fan and you've been disappointed that your favorite river cruise line or one that you've used in the past is no longer there, we have an alternative, and we will share it with you on the Travel Guys in the next couple of weeks. I mentioned in the headlines here, Tom, that there is a deal at Costco with Southwest Airlines that might very well be worth the membership. I think there are a lot of people who maybe don't know about this. You can buy a $500 gift card for Southwest Airlines from Costco for $449.99. Wow. Let's call it $450. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you can get a $50 savings on $500 worth of travel from Southwest. You can buy five for every membership. So if you have a membership at Southwest and the family's getting ready, Costco and the family's getting ready to go on vacation, or you just travel, do a lot of Southwest travel over the course of a year, it would behoove you to take advantage of this benefit. The cards are delivered generally within minutes. They're e-cards that are delivered. And so if you are a member at Costco and you fly Southwest, consider the possibility of looking into this benefit because, gosh, if you can buy five of them, and that's a $250 benefit that and you can use them, why, that would be two or three times the cost, about two times the cost of a Costco membership. So anyway, something for travelers who do business at Costco to consider. We're going to mention this a little bit later on in the program, but just briefly, New York City's hotels have seen a revenue boost. Their occupancy for December compared to December of 2022 was up considerably. More importantly, their RevPAR, which is a comparison of actual revenue for rooms. In other words, it's one thing to fill more of your rooms, but it's entirely another thing to fill more of your rooms at a higher price. And that's what was happening for New York hotels in December. Their RevPAR shot up 15%. The number of listings for short-term rentals of 30 days or less went from 13,000 listings in August to under 3,000 in December, because New York City law was enacted last year that made rental requirements much more onerous for hosts. So if this worked in New York City, you can expect Airbnb, VRBO, and other people to be under the gun in other cities also for short-term rentals. And that's nothing but good for hotels, because the more demand there is for hotels, of course, the better price they get for their rooms. And that's what happened in New York City in December. We talked a little bit earlier this year on the Travel Guys about going to Ecuador, and was Ecuador safe? There have been some governmental changes there and some riots in some parts of the country. Ecuador is important because not only as a individual destination, but it is the jumping off point for many people who go on a Galapagos Islands cruise. So civil unrest there would be of concern to folks going there. However, I've done some research here over the last couple of weeks. An article crossed my desk from one of our news services, and so I went and did some homework myself, looked online in a half a dozen different places, and it appears as though whatever is going on in Ecuador that isn't good for Ecuadorians has not impacted the tourism industry on much of a level as of yet. Folks who have recently completed cruises to the Galapagos report that they were able to get in and out of the country without any issues. In most cases, you are required to spend an overnight before and after your cruise because of timing of getting off the ship and timing of flights and the like. So far, at least, the news, if you have a cruise scheduled for later in the year to the Galapagos Islands and using Ecuador as a jumping off point, it appears that so far everything in Ecuador is going well, at least from a tourism standpoint. But if you have that on your radar screen, then obviously you should keep an eye on that story. Once again, it comes back to what we're always saying here on the Travel Guys. Do your homework. Have you ever been on a time? Are you a cruise man at all?
I want to be. I really do. And I think I'm going to, sooner or later, and I hope it's going to be sooner, I want to take a river cruise. I've never taken an ocean-going cruise. I am prone to motion sickness, but I've heard from a lot of people who also suffer from motion sickness that the new cruise ships are the way they're made, and they weigh the float. You're less likely to spend much time being seasick. So I'm sure there are a lot of folks that can relate to that. So
I second that. Well, we'll have to get you on a cruise. The good trial cruise is the cruise ships at the end of the year position who are up in Alaska will reposition themselves to Mexico or the Caribbean, something like that. And oftentimes those repositioning cruises are very inexpensive. So next time I see one, we will talk about it here on the Travel Guys. One more quick story before we go. Our buddy Chris Elliott says that the worm may be turning a little bit for airline passengers. We're seeing new rights proposed for disabled passengers, new federal protections for air travelers. The Senate has passed some new rules about fee disclosure. Southwest Airlines is announced ambitious plans to overhaul its cabin interiors. And more importantly, airlines last year performed at a better rate. Airlines canceled only 1.2% of domestic flights last year. That was better than the 2.7 rate in 2022 and the 1.9 rate before the pandemic in 2019. So Chris at least strikes an optimistic tone and says that maybe air travel is headed in a better direction. And that is your travel news for today.
And we're the Travel Guys. Check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Hey, a quick reminder. Every Mondays, Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House offers a $2 for $65 dinner special. The options are great. Choices include lobster tail, prime rib, filet bourguignon, chicken marsala, or golden fried prawns. Each entree includes Boston clam chowder, baked potato, vegetables, and San Francisco sourdough rolls. Now, and as always, all week long, mention the Travel Guy Special for a 6-ounce lobster tail dinner for only $29.95. And yeah, Rudy still has that Dungeness crab available in quantity for your crab feed. So check them out, Rudy's Hideaway, right off of Highway 50 in Hazel. Tell them the Travel Guy sent you. All right, Mark, let's dig into this authentic travel experience subject that we've brought up here. Explain.
Well, people, when they're traveling these days,
yes,
they want a personalized experience or an authentic experience. Mm-hmm. We were on Kauai a couple weeks ago, and I talked about going to the chocolate farm.
Right.
And what a terrific tour it was and how much we learned and got to taste different kinds of chocolates and all kinds of wonderful things like that. That was really an experience.
And you also mentioned that you went to a luau that was much more authentic than the normal ones because it was a cultural kind of thing.
It was. So those were really authentic experiences that we were intentionally looking for. We went over to Kauai and found the man who ran the museum so he could come and talk to our people in the museum and tell them about some of the things in the museum and the history of the islands and that sort of narration because it's authentic. And more people are looking for things authentic when they travel. However, as one of the writers on the Ask Joe Brancatelli website, it's what happens when you find a tour where something is a little too authentic. And this writer made a gave a couple of examples. He said, you know, about 30 years ago, he made a trip to Sweden, and he had lunch at a beach at an eel shack.
Eel shack, okay.
The meal for the little group that he was in was eel paired with scrambled eggs and slices of bread. And he says, and mass quantities of vodka. So there's a long tradition of eel fishing in Sweden. It's somewhat under attack nowadays, but 30 years ago it was considered to be part of the culture. So you went there and you ate eel. Whether you kind of sort of were looking for eel or not.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman indicated that there was no way he was going to eat it. He ate some of the eggs and the bread and had more than his share of vodka, but he said he couldn't do the eel thing. He said that was just, and he said other people that were with him seemed to be having bites of the eel and really enjoying it, but he just couldn't bring himself to do it.
Was this, and I don't know why, I feel like I've heard this, are these live eel?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No.
Well, you know, I could see that happening. There's a lot of places that serve, you know, that kind of live or raw, whatever.
If you go to Vietnam, the other example that he gives is if you go to Vietnam, they consume 30 million dogs a year across Asia. So, you know, we think nothing of going into a restaurant and having duck or beef or pork or something like that. Well, in Vietnam, they eat a lot of dog. And if you go, and he was just talking about coming around the corner and finding this shop where, you know, there was a whole crispy dog hanging in the window.
Oh, my gosh. And that's just absurd.
Well, it is to you.
Yeah, that's true.
But to someone who was looking for a really authentic experience, then there it was, right in your face. He said, you know, and there were all kinds of different, just like you'd go to a butcher shop.
Right.
And so just like you have done here, he was like, yuck, that is like really not the thing. But again, you know, how authentic do you want your visits to be? How authentic do you, you know, if you're, here's a perfect example. You're in a hotel and you want to stay in the heart of the action and you get your hotel room. Well, and your hotel room looks out over the town square and you've gone there during a celebration weekend or something like that. And so now it's noisy as heck until all hours of the night and you're part of that. Well, you wanted the authentic experience.
Right.
You got a little more authentic of the experience than you were hoping for. So it's a lot of this has to do with homework. Something we talk about a lot on this program. You can't do too much of it, but just keep in mind that when you're traveling, especially to foreign countries off of this continent, that you are likely to see some things that are a lot different than what you experience here. Some of them may be things that make your eyes roll back in your head a little bit, but so just when you're looking for authentic, keep an eye out for how much authentic you really want, because for some people there is a limit to authentic. I would be one of those people. If I came around the corner and saw the dog hanging in the window, that would not be a good thing for me. But probably dozens, hundreds, thousands of people walk by that window every day, and it doesn't mean anything of significance to them whatsoever. So because they live differently than we do here in these United States. And it is, we are known, U.S. travelers are known for being, oh my God, how could you do that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, when in Rome, it endorse something, but you have to go, okay, yeah, I kind of knew that was coming, and that's the reason I'm here. Some of the authentic experiences may not be quite exactly up my alley, But you know, when you travel, it's okay to be taken out of your comfort zone a little bit once in a while.
Exactly. You know, the cruises and that stop in, you know, far off destinations, you're going to run into some things that you might see and food that they're going to serve. And certainly in the markets, the open markets, the things that are for sale, if you're not into eating food that is not cooked, you know, sushi, raw meats and so forth, you're going to run across a lot of that. But like you said, Mark, you got to do your homework, you know, and figure out if you're totally foreign to that particular location, you need to do your research. And then again, there are those that seek out that. They seek out something completely out of the ordinary. And you know what? That's okay. I'm not going to do the dog right away, but I like authentic experiences with dining pleasures.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, like I said, the authentic experience might be the location of your hotel or the person who's guiding you around in that particular city or region or something like that. Authentic generally comes with a price. So not everything is authentic. You know, you go to the store and something says vanilla flavored. Only, 4 or 5% of that is actually vanilla. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is synthetic stuff. So if it tastes good and is what you like, then maybe you don't care. But if you're spending thousands of dollars to go on a vacation somewhere, you might want to just sit down for a day, an hour, 30 minutes, and do a little overview of where it is that you're going to make sure that where you're going and how they live there is someplace that will be compatible to your travels. And that'll make you a little smarter traveler. Our guest from Travelers United is Charlie Leoka. Charlie, about a week and a half ago, you penned something in your newsletter about checked bag fee refund rules and about how 8 years ago Congress had passed something and it has never taken effect, which I found somewhat amusing. In this case, not too amusing because it's something that negatively impacts passengers. So my question to you is twofold. One is, how is it that Congress could have passed something 7 or 8 years ago and it hasn't taken effect yet? Explain how that happens, and then explain, if you would, what the rules that we should be benefiting are all about.
Okay. Well, first of all, you need to realize that, first of all, there is a congressional action or a congressional bill which is passed. And theoretically, everybody thinks that once you get a bill through Congress, that's the end. But it normally takes around 2 to 4 or sometimes even longer years, to get the thing actually in place. And then there's a rulemaking responsibility, which is up to the DOT. And most of the changes that we've seen come into place have been rulemaking changes. And those have gone through at least a two-year vetting together with the DOT. So those are the two different ways that rules are made, and they become law. Basically, the congressional system becomes a law. There's a law that says we should have delayed baggage compensation. But DOT still has to do the minutiae to make that happen. And then there's also a law that says all families should be able to sit together. And that all kids who are 13 and younger need to be able to sit with their parents. But even though that's been passed, and even though there's been a law passed, it hasn't happened because DOT has not yet come up with a system to make it work.
For folks that are listening and don't know, DOT is shorthand for Department of Transportation. And Charlie, how can that be? I mean, it seems like that there would be checks and balances in the system that once Congress did something and said, make this happen, that there would be some kind of time limit. And what you're kind of indicating here is that not only did this happen many years ago, it still isn't in place. Is that true?
That's very, very true. And it hasn't happened for a number of reasons. First of all, Congress, when they come up with a bill saying that they're going to have all these things happen, it only happens once every 5 years. And the bills then, and this is the FAA reauthorization bill. So what ends up happening is they come up with maybe 10 different items, maybe 20 different items that all need to be done within 1 year or 2 years. And we just don't have the people in place to do that. And Congress knows that, and DOT knows that, but the congressmen want to make sure that they do something about problems. And what they do about the problems is they talk about them, and they pass laws which they know will never come into effect.
It kind of seems like Congress is having it both ways. They can pass a law that makes consumers happy, but if the law never takes effect, then the negative impact that it might have on companies that would be lobbying Congress, then they have it their way, too, because the law has never taken effect. OK, so thanks for that somewhat elongated explanation, because I felt it was important. Tell us now, what are the things that Congress that we're waiting on rules to be written so that we can so they can take effect so that consumers can reap the benefit? You talked about families sitting together and checked baggage fees. Elaborate a little bit, if you would.
OK, well, for the Families Sitting Together Act, that was an act passed by Congress. They passed onto DOT, and they said, if necessary, then go ahead and set up this rule. And under Trump and under Elaine Chao, they determined that it was not necessary to have that rule. And therefore, they just ignored it, and they never passed anything. And even though consumer advocates went nuts, and we did everything in our power to try to get Congress to act, for the DOT to act and execute congressional will, it never happened. So that's one situation. And that happens strictly because of politics, because we got the wrong people in charge of DOT, and they said, well, we don't care about consumers, we only care about the airlines. And that's what ended up happening there.
Okay, so tell me about the checked bag, the delayed bag thing, because this seems like another no-brainer sort of situation.
Well, it should be a no-brainer situation.
Now, Charlie, was there also something in this that had something to do with payment for how long a bag was delayed? What was considered to be a delay long enough for a consumer to expect some sort of remuneration?
Well, it came out to, I don't really remember because it's been so long ago. And nothing new has really happened. But it used to be something like a three-hour delay in getting the material to you. And mm-hmm. if they could get the bag to you by a courier or by one of these people that have working for the airlines, then it was considered delivered on time. And all the people that I know are saying, wait a second, that's not right, because we have – a lot of people fly and they get into an area where they only have maybe 2 hours before they've got to be at some sort of an event. And there they need a suit or they need a tie or they need their tuxedo. And so, or better yet, if they're going to Aspen, they need to get their ski suit or
right.
ski boots. And they just can't get those materials quickly enough.
So, Charlie, we're just about out of time here. Where do we go from here? If we've been waiting all this time and we're maybe about – I mean, it's entirely possible that in November we could change administrations again back to the previous administration that did nothing on this. So are we basically at the mercy of just these bureaucrats?
Basically, we are, because even though we had – everybody complained about Trump – and the fact that he didn't get all these consumer protections all done, if we ask and we say, what consumer protections have we gotten through the Biden administration and through the DOT secretary, we've gotten nothing. And so everything just rolls along. Consumers get forgotten.
So it's a bipartisan lack of effort is kind of what you're indicating here.
It is. And it's a, bi-
right.
it's a
well,
bipartisan. And that's a word you don't find very often in Washington.
No, you don't with Washington. Charlie, thanks for the explanation. It's kind of a no explanation because we're really not going anywhere. But at least maybe people have a little bit of an understanding when they hear that, you know, hey, this rule is going to go into effect or Congress has done this and they wonder why it never happened. Why at least now they have a little bit of an explanation. Charlie, thanks again for your time, my friend. Travelers United is Charlie's organization. There is a link to Travelers United at travelguysradio.com. It's a nonprofit organization that mostly advocates for those of us who can't advocate for ourselves. If you went online and checked out their website, you might decide that a membership was appropriate there, or if nothing else, you would be a smarter traveler. So, Charlie, thank you again for your time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Let's get started. Mark, I mentioned that something about Wendy's and dynamic pricing. What have you read and what do you know?
Well, this story is not brand new. It's been around most of the week. For those of you who haven't heard, the Wendy's CEO came out and said, well, you know, their restaurant was going to go to dynamic pricing so that at different times of the day, prices would be different. Those of us who have heard about dynamic pricing know that it's never good for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means is that they're going to jack prices up at certain times of the day. So immediately on social media, people got really upset really quickly. And the CEO had to backtrack the next day and say, no, that's what I said, but that's not what I meant. What I meant was that we're not going to raise prices on items at certain times of the day. We're going to lower prices on some items to give you an incentive to come at times of the day when we're less busy.
Well, okay.
So that's not so bad. And it's Wendy's. It's a fast food restaurant. So why is it on a travel show? Well, the reason we're talking about it is because what if your favorite steakhouse decided that, you know, if you want to come on Saturday night, that's fine, but it'll be an extra $15 for a Saturday night reservation, maybe an extra $10 for Friday. And if there's a special event going on or something like that, we'll adjust accordingly. And people basically told Wendy's in the burger business, you know, if you do that, we just won't come during those times. I mean, that's forget it. And I got to thinking that since hotels and airlines and baseball teams and concert sellers and all kinds of theater people have latched onto this, what if every restaurant in the country decided that they were going to do dynamic pricing, and how would that work for people? And I think what we saw from the reaction even to this fast food chain was take that idea and put it where the sun doesn't shine, because people were, I mean, the stuff that was said on social media within 24 hours and the different things that they were doing off of the Wendy's name and stuff like that were just really, really interesting to read.
What he really wanted folks to know that at certain times of the day, they were going to have reduced prices and specials on things that might cost the normal price at other times. And I think that restaurants already do that, offer discounts on certain days and so forth. But, man, if it starts to go towards increasing prices because of, a busy Saturday or a busy Friday, that's... Nobody's, I mean, we're already getting screwed by the hotels and the airlines, and you want to go to a Kings game, you know, you start looking at teams that are the higher echelon, those tickets always cost you more.
The Yankees are coming to play the Giants in San Francisco this year, and the ticket prices are unbelievable. I mean, it's well over $100 to get what I would consider a good seat to a Giants game, and even if you don't want a, quote, good seat, you want to be in the ballpark, is $50 or $60. Those are tickets that, in my recent memory, sold for $5 or $10.
So, right.
But this whole restaurant thing, if it went the opposite direction of what Wendy's is doing, then dynamic pricing suddenly becomes a little better for the consumer, especially when you're traveling.
They just
need if you knew, if you knew that your favorite steakhouse.
Yeah.
Would give you a discount if you came in at 4:30 in the afternoon. By golly, you might be able to make that work. You know, when you're in Hawaii, and it's 2 or 3 hours difference depending on what time of the year it is. It's already when it's 4:30 in Hawaii, it's already 6:30 or 7:30 back here. So your body is saying, "Hey, psst, it's dinner time." So you can take advantage of some of those things. You're on the East Coast, maybe you eat a late dinner. Maybe you eat at 8 o'clock or 8:30 because to your body that's 5 or 5:30, and you're kind of okay with that if you're not going to bed right away. So, anyways, I just thought the dynamic pricing thing from an oh my god response to a you know what this might actually turn out to be to the consumer's benefit. Of course, restaurants have to turn down an opportunity to increase revenue and in essence decrease revenue in order to get business at different times. But the way you fix that, if you're a restaurant owner, is you just raise your prices 5% across the board.
Well, they just need to call it something else, okay? Don't refer to it as dynamic pricing anymore. If you're going to have reduced prices at certain times of the day, call it something else. And then people's hair won't stand up on the back of their neck.
If you're in a well-known spot for travelers, call it the Traveler's Special.
I've heard of that. There's a Travel Guy Special going on right now.
I was just
going
to say, do we not have an advertiser on this program who is trying to incentivize people to come in at different on Monday nights or at slower times and offering them a little bit better deal? And so I don't know about you, but it works for me. I'm pretty flexible. I'm willing to eat dinner a little earlier in the day, especially on a weekend, if I can get a better deal or if I can just get a table and not have to worry about all that. Okay, speaking of restaurants and tables, quick story here. Digital tipping technology aimed at tour guides has lagged behind developments in other sectors of travel and hospitality, such as hotels and restaurants. I work with tour directors who are tipped. They're not people who work with a group for an hour or two like a step-on guide in a city or somebody who's giving you a city tour of San Francisco or something like that. At the end of their tour, they would love for you to flip them a few dollars for if they did a good job. But right now, with fewer and fewer people carrying cash, so henceforth, a new piece of technology called Tip Direct, which will allow you to be able to tip a buck or two or three or five to people along the way for folks who do not carry cash. So I'm not a huge fan of all of this tipping culture, but none of this does seem to make sense.
It does.
I can't tell you how valuable a step-on guide or a driver who narrates a tour is in a city. When we go to Key West, we have a wonderful driver down there. I think I've mentioned him on this program. Louie, who takes us around in the Old Town Trolley. The guy's been doing it for 30 years. And he's a stage show all by himself.
Yeah, that's worth it.
I mean, I tip him really well because he does a really good job. And my people really have a good time. And they've paid me $3,000 or $4,000 to go all the way to Key West. So an extra $5 a person gratuity is insignificant if it helps them have a better time. So I'm not a big guy on tipping, but when you've got a guide that you have for a day or part of a day or something like that, and you want to reward them, they generally are not tremendously overpaid. So tipping is that the tips are a part of their income. So in that case, I think that this piece of technology might be fine. It's better than having the company add an automatic gratuity onto your bill.
Well, Mark, I've known you long enough. You are a tipper guy. You just said you were. It's just that you're not much on being, having to tip for something that's not worth anything, or to have a tip forced on you, a tablet put in front of your face while somebody's leaning over your shoulder and they're asking for, I've seen this many times, beginning tip price 18%.
Yeah, well, Tom, there are tablets now that you'll see the beginning tip price is 20%.
Man.
Instead of 18, 20, 25, it says 20, 25, 30. People who are listening to this program right now are shaking their heads going, yeah, that's what I've seen too. You know, it used to be a 15% gratuity was considered to be more than adequate and more than fair. And if you tipped over that 18 to 20, that was because the service was just over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't tip 18 to 20% with the person standing there, you can feel their eyeballs saying, what did I do to you that was so awful? So anyways, it's another opportunity out there, a way to be able to compensate people who deserve it when it's not, quote, blackmail. All right. So one other quick story here in our odds and ends segment before we go. This is about renting a VRBO. Airbnb is the same way. Quick sidebar before I get into this, Tom. New York City has tightened the restrictions around people subletting. You know, you can't put your apartment up on Airbnb if it's an apartment and you don't own it because you're subleasing something that you're not supposed to. It was cutting into the hotel's revenue quite a lot.
Wow.
So they've cracked down on this. And interestingly enough, hotel occupancy in December was 2.5 points higher than it was December the previous year. 2.5 points is a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It would be the difference between a hotel making and losing money if they had 75% as opposed to 72% occupancy. Every hotel is different. But anyways, it tighten things up, and it appears as though fewer people in New York City. So if you're somebody who used to go to New York and you used Airbnb or VRBO or something like that, and you got a better deal and you're wondering why that's not happening anymore, that's the reason why, is because people were doing things they weren't supposed to do. Okay, so you rent a vacation rental, or you're on business, whatever we call them, vacation rentals, and you get there and there's a problem. So now what are you going to do? I mean, if it's a very big problem, something where it's like, you know, if this isn't fixed right away, then I'm going to have to stay in a hotel tonight. Or is it a small problem that's an aggravation? Was the place not cleaned properly? Somebody didn't take out the trash, so the whole place smells bad. So what do you do in those situations? Well, the first thing you should do is contact the host for wherever it is that you're staying. That's the first thing. The next thing you want to do is you want to notify the rental platform. And the other thing you want to be real careful is the tendency is to do a lot of this stuff on the telephone. So make sure that if you have a conversation on the phone that you immediately follow it up with an email with what the bulk of the conversation was about, whether you're talking to the host or you're talking to the platform itself. If you don't get a response within 24 to 48 hours, Chris Elliott at Elliott.org has a list of all the top people in different organizations, and you can write directly to them, and you would be surprised how often it's possible that the CEO has somebody monitoring their email and looking for things like that. So don't be afraid to do that. If none of that works, consider a credit card chargeback, but know that if you do that, you're likely to be kicked off of that platform until the whole thing is resolved. So be very careful about credit card chargeback. And make sure, again, make sure that you create a paper trail. No matter what happens with the rental, make sure that you create a paper trail. And also be reasonable and open to negotiations. I mean, you're not going to get your way exactly every time. So that's just a few tips. If you're looking at vacation rentals and you get one and something's not right and you're negotiating about it, make sure that everything that's decided or that's discussed is in writing.
Well, there you go. Well, we're just about at the end of another Travel and Entertainment Guys radio program. Hope you got something out of it to make you a smarter traveler. Don't forget our website, travelguysradio.com. There's lots of great information there.
And don't forget, all week, dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. See you next Saturday, 11 a.m., for another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys.
Traveler is always leaving town. Yeah.